The Spendthrift 80s, Part 8, Songs, 1984-1985. The four singers who made up the Culture Club came from different cultures, hence their name. John Moss was Jewish, Mickey Craig, Jamaican, Roy Hay, British, George O'Dowd, the lead singer and better known as Boy George, was Irish. It was Boy George with his plucked eyebrows, facial makeup, and fey sway who garnered all the media attention. So much so, it seemed as if George Allan O'Dowd, born in London in 1961, was Culture Club. The group had enjoyed two hits in 1983, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me, number 4 in March, and Time, number 4 in May. Karma Chameleon, a song whose title and lyrics mystified many a fan, was the group's first number 1 single in America. 3 weeks at the top of the charts in February of 1984. It topped Yes's Owner of a Lonely Heart, and then succumbed to Van Halen's Jump. In the spring, Cyndi Lauper, a funky new wave singer who became part of WrestleMania by managing one of its superstars, Captain Lou Albano, enjoyed a hit with Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and as to counterbalance that feminist song title, Denise Williams sang her way to success with Let's Hear It for the Boys. She was soon displaced by a number one by Lauper's Time After Time, this last dispelling the industry gossip that Lauper, termed by Newsweek as a new wave Gracie Allen, was destined to be nothing more than a one-hit wonder. Time After was soon topped by Duran Duran's The Reflex, which in turn gave up the number one slot to Prince's When Doves Cry, a single from his smash album Purple Rain. Also the title of Prince's semi-autobiographical 1984 film Purple Rain. Doves yielded its first place to Ray Parker's Ghostbusters from the Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd film of that title. In the last quarter of 1984, Prince and the Revolution was back on top with Let's Go Crazy, and Cyndi Lauper had her third hit with Shebop. Also, two veteran singers appeared on the chart, the ever-youthful Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do With It, and Stevie Wonder with I Just Called to Say I Love You. Bruce Springsteen, following his Hungry Heart hit, climbing to number 5 in 1980, enjoyed a smash album success with Born in the USA. But the singing and video sensation who held the country's top song in the final week of 1984 was the decade's female counterpart to Michael Jackson, Madonna, with Like a Virgin. Born Madonna Louise Veronica Ciccone, August 16, 1959. The singer had a hit in 1983, Lucky Star, but her breakthrough to big-time stardom was Like a Virgin. Number one for 6 straight weeks, and shortly after it started to slide, her Material Girl ascended the charts. Garnering rave reviews from her role in the film Desperately Seeking Susan, she established herself as a multimedia phenomenon. As the decade progressed, Madonna's star shone brighter and brighter, flashing supernova with her worldwide Blonde Ambition tour. The week that the 2.5-hour elaborately choreographed extravaganza, a trademark blend of sassy simulated sex and spiritual symbolism, hit New York. The star appeared as Breathless Mahoney in the blockbuster film Dick Tracy. And in 1990, the MTV banned her video for Justify My Love. The Material Girl, she brought back conical bustiers, championed self-crotch grabbing for females, made headlines throughout the civilized world. The video, which featured a steamy, fun-loving orgy in Paris in a Paris hotel, highlighted simulated sex, voyeurism, and self-fondling, merited exposure on ABC's Nightline, in which the star seemed to define a First Amendment right to free expression of sexual fantasies. Record stores could not amply supply the video for the Christmas season. The platinum-haired chanteuse turned dominatrix, whose personal motto was perhaps best summed up in her title of her video, Express Yourself, underscored the importance of the music video better than anyone. Can anyone think of a Madonna song and not be flooded with the corresponding visual imagery? The aural is inseparable from the visual. Indeed, for Madonna, it can be argued that much of her success derives not from discos, cassettes, or CDs, but from music videos. The novelty hit of 1984 was Eat It, which belonged to Weird Al Yankovic with Michael Jackson, who in his demented style parodied Jackson's Beat It, and the next year he spoofed Madonna's Like a Virgin with Like a Surgeon. 1985. It was the year that the teen idol George Michael appeared on the American music scene with his phenomenally successful first effort, Careless Whisper, number one for 3 weeks in February. That same year, music impresario Maurice Starr was rounding up from the streets of Boston five wholesome would-be singers to groom and package as the new kids on the block. A fad as much as a rock group. The sub-teen heartthrobs would soon be a pop music cottage industry, the focus of an official autobiography or story, scrapbooks, comic books, coloring books, and fan clubs. By the end of the decade, the new kids sold 17 million albums in the U.S. alone and had five smash singles, of which three made it to number one. Two unofficial paperback biographies were simultaneously on the bestseller lists and positions of number two and three, and their 1988 album, Hangin' Tough, sold 11 million copies worldwide. The group was one of pop music's marketing miracles in the late 80s. In just the final year of the decade, the New Kids merchandise pulled in an estimated $400 million. While Impresario Starr was slickly packaging the New Kids, the largest gathering of American singers ever was uniting under the rubric USA for Africa to fight hunger in Africa with a consciousness-raising and money-raising song. Earlier, a union of British artists calling themselves Band-Aid had raised money with their hit, Do They Know It's Christmas? Using Band-Aid as their model, Henry Belafonte contacted Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson, who wrote We Are the World, virtually effortlessly, as the two performers later acknowledged. Producer Quincy Jones decided that the best way to engage as many big-name singers as possible was to hold a recording session on the night of the American Music Awards, January 28, 1985. Some of the 45 artists who took part, Ray Charles, Bob Dylan, Hall & Oates, Billy Joel, Cindy Lauper, Huey Lewis, Bette Midler, Diana Ross, Paul Simon, Bruce Springsteen, Tina Turner, Dionne Warwick, and Stevie Wonder, We Are the World was the number one for 4 weeks, raising millions of dollars for the starving populations of Africa. For a period that spring, at top, Phil Collins' One More Night and two Madonna songs, Crazy for You and Material Girl. In the late spring, George Michael, with Wham, was back in first place with Everything She Wants. In a few months, Michael would split with his Wham partner, Andrew Ridgeley, and go solo, growing a voguish patina of facial stubble, repackaging himself to his adoring sub-teen admirers. Other hits of 1985, Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Duran Duran's A View to a Kill, Whitney Houston's You Give Good Love, and Saving All My Love for You, and Stevie Wonder's Part-Time Lover. As the year drew to a close, Starship had a number one single, We Built This City, and the popular year-old NBC TV crime scene Miami Vice provided a chart topper for keyboard artist Jan Hammer with original music he'd composed for the program, the Miami Vice theme. The album Miami Vice was also produced a hit single, You Belong to the City, 1985. Whereas We Are the World was a joint effort to help the hungry of Africa, That's What Friends Are For by Dionne Warwick and Friends was a number one hit, with profits going to an American Foundation for AIDS research. The song was actually written earlier in the decade by Burt Bacharach and Carol Bear Sanger for the 1982 film Night Shift. Later, Bacharach played it for his longtime friend Dionne Warwick. She felt that as a duet it could take her to the top of the charts, and she suggested Stevie Wonder as her partner. By coincidence, the actress and AIDS fundraiser, Elizabeth Taylor, was in the recording studio and heard the duet. It was a stroke of genius on the part of Carol Bayer Sanger to suggest that the song be used to raise funds for AIDS research. Taylor loved the idea, and Warwick felt that the plural friends in the song's title required additional voices to be included on the recording. Thus, real-life friends Gladys Knight and Elton John became part of the ensemble. The single, 4 weeks at number one, topping Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time, came about by as much happenstance and, as Warwick later said, probably by the emotion of the Bacharach-Sanger song that seemed to suggest it should be more than a solo, more than a duet, and more than just another chart topper. The single was displaced by Whitney Houston's How Will I Know. The singer soon had another hit with The Greatest Love of All, number one in May in 1985. Houston, in turn, vacated the top of the charts to Madonna's Live to Tell. Then Madonna returned to the top spot with her highly controversial Papa Don't Preach. Many people felt the song encouraged teen pregnancies. Others believed that it encouraged fruitful discussion about pregnant teens and their parents. The Pro-Life League adopted Papa Don't Preach as an anthem, whereas other groups argued that Madonna should make a public statement that unwed pregnant teens have the option of abortion. And as always, I hope you enjoyed that. Don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.